I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Canada's Parliament reopened for business today, and this was its first order of business. A standing ovation for Sergeant-at-Arms Kevin Vickers. He's the one who police say shot and killed the gunman responsible for yesterday's violence in Ottawa. The gunman had burst into the main Parliament building after fatally wounding a soldier at a nearby war memorial. The attack was the second this week to target Canada's military. On Monday, near Montreal, a man ran over two soldiers with his car, killing one of them before being shot dead himself by police. One witness to yesterday's violence was Josh Wingrove. He covers Parliament for the Globe and Mail newspaper.
Today we saw parliamentarians sort of return and put on a united face. And of course, these are the same people, a lot of them, that were in the rooms on either side of the hallway where the suspect was shot and killed yesterday. It's been just a surreal couple of days here in Ottawa, and a week really in Canada, where we've had now two sort of terror attacks by sort of Canadian born and raised radicalized guys. And the toll on that has so far been two Canadian soldiers dead. So I think everyone's thoughts and prayers are with them and looking to the federal government to see what we can do about this.
Right, that other attack in Quebec. Now, yesterday's attack in Ottawa, we know now that the gunman was a man named Michael Zahaf-Bibeau. What can you tell us about him?
The Prime Minister said today that he was Canadian, born and raised. You know, he's got a history of petty theft in a few communities. I mean, this is a guy that was troubled and was on a radar quite a while. And what Canada has done in some of these cases is yank a passport but not lay charges. It sounds like this was another one of those cases. And in fact, minutes before the shooting began, I was interviewing the Justice Minister saying, hey, we need to review what powers we have. If we don't have enough to lay a charge, we need a way to track these guys. And, you know, minutes later, we were living the reality of that. So I think Canada has said they had about 90 cases, homegrown terror cases that they are monitoring. Monday's attack and Wednesday's attack are said to be on that list. You know, they're not coming out of left field, but I think there are real questions here about whether the government has enough power. They say that they don't have enough to lay charges, and yet they're onto these guys. And if they yank their passports, you got to think that some of these guys sort of now know that they're under the microscope, and you wonder whether that adds any gas to the fire.
What is the evidence supporting Prime Minister Harper's claim that this was a terrorist event?
After Monday's attack, the Prime Minister immediately dubbed it a terror attack and sort of took some heat for that because people said, well, we don't really know that yet. And of course, as it turns out, we did have a radicalized individual who had his passport seized and happened to be targeting soldiers. So, I mean, the Prime Minister looks to have been right. I suppose it depends on what your definition of a terror attack is. What we have here are homegrown cases, radicalized cases tied to, you know, perversions of Islam, if even tied to Islam, and, you know, rejected by mosques. These are extreme cases that have been dubbed terror attacks. They're homegrown. These are not foreign fighters sent here. So I think there's a pretty important distinction there.
Josh, yesterday early reports suggested there were several shooters. Are there any other suspects, and are they still being sought?
You know, that's a great question. I think we're sort of up in the air on that. I mean, they said no, but, you know, I was held in lockdown for 12 hours yesterday. So, I mean, I can't imagine they would have done that were they sure that the Parliament building and the area around it was safe. This guy appears to have gone from the war memorial where he shot and killed the soldiers a short distance away within eyesight to the main Parliament building, which is where I was. He shot at people there. He struck one guard in the leg and didn't kill him and then was gunned down himself. You can see the path emerging, so it does support the notion there might have been one person.
Josh, let me just ask you one more thing. You know better than I do the words, "We stand on guard for thee," the line from the Canadian National Anthem. It really couldn't be more true, could it, of Kevin Vickers, a Sergeant-at-Arms, who is credited with having shot and killed the gunman. Tell us what you know about Mr. Vickers.
So he's a fixture around Parliament, has been for quite some time. We understand he's quite the marksman, and they have sort of sport shooting events, and he does well on those. I mean, the Sergeant-at-Arms is a ceremonial role, but he's also sort of Parliament's top cop. That's why he was there today. He should have happened very, very close to his office. His office is just around the corner. From my perspective, all I saw was a lot of gunfire. I can't tell you know, which bullet from which gun brought him down. I was stunned by the number of gunshots fired. It was just, I have to say, a surreal moment and just a heartbreaking day here for us in Ottawa.
Josh Wingrove with the Globe and Mail newspaper speaking with us from an Ottawa slowly getting back to normal. One of the most remarkable things Canada did yesterday in response to the Ottawa shootings was the decision to order off-duty military personnel across the country to get out of uniform or get off the streets. That order remains in effect, and it suggests the authorities might be nervous about further attacks. As we heard, the perpetrators of these two attacks in Canada this week were Canadian citizens, born and bred, converts to Islam. But did they know each other, and what kind of background do they come from? Eli Lake is national security reporter for the Daily Beast, and he's been looking into those questions. What have you found, Eli Lake? Are the two attacks connected in any way?
Well, I would say that it's really premature, and as we know from covering some of these tragedies before, it's really always very wise to sort of say at this point information is coming in. But I would say that in our piece that we ran at the Daily Beast last night, Stockwell Day, who is a former Minister of Public Safety, which oversees the Canadian security and intelligence agencies, said that he had independent information that said that both of the suspects had a common digital trail, meaning that they had frequented the same internet chat rooms and websites. We also know that in his address to the nation, Prime Minister Stephen Harper made it clear that these were acts of terrorism and even linked this to ISIS, a group that is gaining ground in Syria and Iraq right now. So in that respect, I think the Canadian authorities are beginning to sort of, they don't want to give too much information. And I would say that there's one other piece of purely circumstantial evidence, but something that some Canadian officials and others have sort of mentioned to me as a possibility is that an event to honor Malala, the Pakistani woman who was a Nobel Peace Prize winner this year, was canceled. And this may indicate that there is a concern that there are kind of more of a network that is out there than the government at least wants to sort of publicly say at this point.
Right. So is there any broader threat that's being talked about in kind of intelligence circles, either chatter or otherwise?
Well, the public number in Canada of how many, for lack of a better word, extremists or jihadists they know about who are Canadian citizens in the country is 90. Stockwell Day told me in an interview that he believed that the number should be higher, and I suppose people can disagree about that. But what's interesting is that the Canadian system is such where their equivalent of the NSA is not nearly as large or has the sort of reach of the American version. But the Canadian law allows far more what you might consider to be kind of unwarranted surveillance of Canadian citizens who are suspected of becoming radical extremists than the American law would.
I have to ask you this, too. Both these men, the Monday attack and yesterday's attack in Ottawa, they seem a little isolated, a little on society's fringe. And I know there have been discussions about the mental stability of both.
Right.
What is the mental health element here?
Yeah, I don't want to get beyond what we know at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that it's fair to say that there's an overlap between people with mental health disorders, after all. I mean, who would rationally choose to join a group like ISIS, right? Most Muslims reject that kind of, you know, pornographic and extreme violence and bigotry. It does appeal, I think, to losers and fringe figures and people with mental health issues and people who are prone to kind of fantasism and conspiracy theory. And in that respect, you know, the two things sort of swim in the same pool. People who are sort of caught up in some of these kinds of movements like this tend to have mental health issues.
Eli Lake with the Daily Beast. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.